Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, Mark Johnson's with us because a matter of some urgency is upon us as broadcast engineers. If we don't fix this problem now or make arrangements for it soon, the FCC may be asking us, so what'd you do with the money? It's coming up next on Twerked. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, online at nautel.com/webinars. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we're talking about everything from the microphone to that light bulb at the top of the tower. And we're going to talk about something that's probably out in your yard. Out in the backyard and the side yard, maybe even in front of the radio station. But they're everywhere. Almost every station's got one, and we're talking about it on this show. It's coming up. I'm Kirk Harnack, host of the show This Week in Radio Tech, coming to you from our Nashville studio, the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee, where it's a dreary day, not raining, but just dreary, a little bit chilly, and I'm so glad to be inside and with some good friends. So let's swing on over to the New York City area where Chris Tobin is standing by. Chris, welcome in.
Hello, everyone. Sorry, I'm just having some nice jitter juice, coffee.
Jitter juice.
Well, of course it is. You know, when you got to do those transmitter jobs or late night studio work, that's how it goes. Or maybe the rooftop of the satellite dish, clearing out the snow at this time of year for those of us in the Northeast.
I don't know if Suncast is a two shot. I'm drinking apple juice.
Yes, I usually have it neat, but that's okay.
So we got jitter juice, apple juice. I wonder what our guest is drinking today, if anything. Our guest is Mark Johnson. He's been here before.
Boat juice.
And Mark has some urgent news for us we're going to get right to. Mark, welcome into the show. Good to see you.
Hey, Kirk. Chris, just the clear stuff.
Yeah.
That's Tito's. Yeah, that's good.
That's where I hide my Tito's as well. Guys, oh my gosh, you're going to get me in so much trouble. A man can't even drink apple juice during the show. Good gosh. Yeah. Mark, we're going to get to your message here in just a couple minutes. But Mark, give us the elevator, the tease talk about what you're talking about. Opt in, opt out. There's money involved and some urgency. What's this all about?
There is definitely some urgency. We've been talking all year and really going back 2 years about the coming 5G encroachment into C-band. The FCC is giving up a portion of that bandwidth that you've used to receive your live programming for 35 years, and now it's going to them. So we have to protect your live programming, and we're going to talk about what you need to do to make sure that your programming is reliable and inexpensive.
I'm going to have to ask you later on about the technology involved in squeezing what we did do in this much space down to this much space, and if that is actually problematic or if our technology today can really handle it just fine. But we'll get to that question in a few minutes. This Week in Radio Tech is we're going to have this announcement about Nautel in a second, but I want to give a shout out to Raytop and Radio Guide. Radio Guide and Twerked have a little bit of an agreement, a cross-promotional agreement. I'm here to tell you that Radio Guide just keeps stepping up its game with terrific authors and great articles. I just read this article last night, A New Way to Run Coax Underground, using this technology that you see by the side of the road when they're pushing pipes and burrowing pipes underground and under driveways, under roads with fiber optic cables in them, usually. But here's an AM station that used that same equipment and technology to run some new cabling to one of the towers. So, in fact, it was for a new STL and for an FM translator antenna. So that's pretty cool. You'll find a lot of cool articles in Radio Guide. And this is such a nice thing happened today. I read this last night, but I didn't get quite past the middle of Radio Guide. And look at this. In the Shop Talk area, Shop Talk column, Steve Tusenu puts in a nice blurb about this show about This Week in Radio Tech. Thank you, Steve. That's so kind of you to do that. And yeah, Steve, I've wanted to have you on the show for a long time. I know you got involved in a station move and a personal move. So when you get all settled and get everything solved at your stations or in the thick of it, well, we'd love to have you on the show. All right. Hey, I want to tell you, Nautel. They keep continuing this Transmission Talk Tuesday. It's a fun time to get together because if you want to, you get to be part of the discussion. It's a round table. It's not a webinar. It's a round table discussion. So you'll hear your friends and your colleagues participating along with it. And you're welcome to raise your hand and say, hey, Jeff Welton, I got a story to tell about that. Coming up next week on Tuesday, it's going to be Fixing HD. Fixing HD. Now, why would we even need to say fixing HD? Well, there are a lot of online forum threads about why HD radio isn't working. And almost all of them are either less than a stellar implementation or perhaps an early adopter situation where the station is unable to upgrade to the current state of the art due to limitations of the older hardware. Well, this session will expand on a paper that Jeff wrote for NAB a couple of years back and talk about the primary challenges seen by an HD implementation and the best ways to resolve those challenges or why they're no longer challenges if you have the current implementation. Now, here's the guest. Ed Bucant is going to be on there, quite an expert at HD radio. And our friend Tom Ray is going to be on there as well. And Tom has been fixing a lot of these HD implementations around the Northeast, especially in New York State. So we hope you'll tune in for Transmission Talk Tuesday. Go to Nautel.com/webinars. Nautel.com/webinars and sign yourself up. Easy process. Just click and enter your name and you know what your zip code is, your country or something like that, and your email, and they'll send you a confirmation. And you can also just click that right on your calendar. I do that for my calendar. Just send this to Outlook calendar. I'm sorry. You can do it to Outlook or Google calendar, and it'll remind you. So great series. Thank you, Nautel, for doing this terrific series. Chris, do you have any broken HDs in the New York City area, or are they all perfect?
Well, perfect. Well, they're all operating. They're perfect. On the air. I'm able to decode the signals, HD 1, 2, 3, and some of them there was a 4. But I read that article. I've talked to people over the years, and my personal experience with HD, I've turned the carrier off a couple of times because of problems we had at our transmitter site. We had a reduced heat load. And didn't receive one phone call. I know that's not the most scientific approach. But however, if we miss music and other song titles, I do get phone calls. Lots of them. The problem is I try. I can't find a portable HD radio. And as far as the cars, when I've rented vehicles, that deployment's been kind of strange too. I've had some that work great. Others that seem to be a little troublesome in how they design, what they put in the car. Nothing I can control. So I suspect that what they're doing, Wisconsin Public Radio. They probably found out the same thing, and it is costly to maintain. There is, there's a lot. Total cost of ownership is much higher than you would expect.
Okay. Well, good to know. Well, if you have problems with your HD, tune into Nautel.com/webinars and attend the Fixing HD webinar. Maybe there's some things you can do that are easy. I've seen really dumb things done where they're just permanently out of sync with each other, and it's very frustrating to listen back and forth. And then other problems with metadata, for example, easy metadata stuff, and that's messed up. So check it out next Tuesday. Go ahead and register right now, and you can register for the other upcoming webinars too. Okay, let's get to our guest. Mark Johnson is here. Mark, you have this company that you started called LinkUp Communications. First of all, why don't you tell me a little bit what LinkUp is all about? Why do I need LinkUp to help me with my satellite dish?
Well, LinkUp Communications is a fully encompassing satellite content delivery experts. We build uplinks, we build downlinks, we provide space segment to broadcasters, WayFM, EMF, Moody Radio, Los Angeles Angels. So we build a lot of systems all over the country, C and KU. And then we also, provide support to, iHeart, Beasley, Cumulus, folks who need Westwood, folks who need dishes installed. They need them to operate perfectly, and they want them installed at a high are operated and repaired on a high level. So all of our guys are global VSAT certified, and most of our guys have, you know, 10 to 20 years experience as, you know, broadcast technicians as well as satellite technicians. So, you know, we're a soup to nuts group. We'll do the small job or the big job.
I didn't realize that you were soup to nuts, stem to stern, bumper to bumper. Okay, that's good to know. I thought you just took care of downlinks, but you do the whole thing, including if you need the space segment time, you've got that as well, and you can follow the process all the way through from end to end. I guarantee that. Okay.
Yeah, we have space segment on 6 satellites full time. And we do video as well, mostly audio, but we do a lot of video uplinks as well.
Good deal. Can you get me free HBO? Mm-hmm. That was always the question, you know. back in the day. Can I get free HBO?
Captain Midnight.
Captain Midnight. So we're going to get into what this problem is that people need to worry about. But tell me, you know, for people who may have been out of the loop or just heard a little bit about that 5G was going to take over some of the C-band. Oh, my gosh. What does that mean for us? Give me a little summation of the story here. Why are the cell carriers getting spectrum that I thought was just perfectly licensed to Intelsat and SES? How is the FCC taking, you know, it's almost like telling an FM station, yeah, you guys are at 98.1. You know what? You can operate at 98.1 and above, but we're going to take your channel at 98.1 and below because you don't maybe need that anymore. How did this come about and why was this taken away?
Well, and even on a larger scale, imagine how much, you know, it would cost you to change frequencies on your transmitter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and everything that's associated with it, and make those changes, right? Retune the antennas and, you know, do all of that. Well, now imagine that your site's 22,600 miles away.
Right.
You're basically, ultimately, the FCC is taking away 60% of the C-band inventory that these people invested billions putting up in space for us as broadcasters, as well as the cable head ends. And, you know, they've been doing it since 1980. I actually put my first dish in 1983 as part of the CBS and Mutual and ABC going from landline to satellite. But about 5 or 6 years ago, the House and Senate and the administrations told the FCC that we want to be foremost in 5G. We want to beat China to 5G. We want to beat Europe to 5G. We want to be 5G first. You can have your different opinions about whether that's important or not, but that's the mandate that was given to the FCC. And so beginning about 2017, SES and Intelsat tried to work through the process with them. In fact, for a while, becoming the C-band alliance and putting forth technical proposals as to how we could more quickly get to giving some space to the mobile carriers, to Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, in the top 46 markets. And they came up with this idea of giving up 120 megs the first year and then graduating to 300 megs by the third year, year three. So the idea is that they're compressing everything up above 3820 this year. So if you got a signal that's at 3740, and that's your bandwidth, and maybe you're a radio network with multiple channels and store and forward technology and everything, and it's all in that transport stream at 3720. Well, that has to move before the end of the year. Now, luckily for us in radio, SES has the majority of radio content distribution. So whether it's Westwood, Premier, IMG, Skyview, any of those groups, iHeart's state networks, they're all have been moved up above the 4,000 meg line, which is where ultimately they have to be. So at this point, SES can and plans to begin moving radio folks onto filters as soon as possible, so that they can go ahead and have radio complete across the country. SES also has SES2 at 87 degrees, which is the major satellite content distribution for Christian broadcasters. So SES 11, 105, where the commercial folks are, Galaxy 16 at 99 degrees, where public radio is, and SES2. So each of these companies are, in the process of getting folks moved. SES has actually made the moves on both the Christian radio and on the commercial radio, moved them up to higher transponders. So now a commercial station or a Christian station would be, free to go ahead and put a filter in and block out any potential 5G coming. So the FCC took this plan that Intelsat and SES came up with and spent millions of dollars developing this filter. And this filter is, five or six generations beyond what we think of in like a WiMAX filter or something. It's sharper. It instead of, dropping something 30 dB, it's dropping 70 dB over 20 megs. And it's an incredibly tight filter. And I've actually seen it in live demonstrations at Intelsat's facility in Ellenwood, Georgia. And it's absolutely amazing. But the FCC.
If I could interrupt just a second, I do want to talk about that filter. But the reason the filter is made, and you correct me if my understanding is wrong. Radio, first of all, the satellite, the LNB that goes on your dish, the low noise block amplifier and block down converter that puts out about 70 megs, it's not 70 anymore. What's about 1100?
L-band.
Anyway, L-band. So that's what goes on your satellite dish, and you got a nice piece of RG6 or whatever that comes into the building, goes into your satellite receiver. All that was designed for the existing C band, starting about 4.7 gigahertz and going on up above 4 gigahertz. So it was designed to cover that. So the receiver was designed for that. The LNB was designed for that. And now we are only going to be able to use a portion of that, the upper portion, starting at 4 gigs and above. And here's the rub. There will be local interference from local in your area transmitters on 5G in the space where you used to be picking up very weak satellite signals from space. And
For four decades, we've developed a system.
Yeah.
That LNB that you talked about, that 3.7 meter dish, we've developed a system which is reaching out to grab a very faint signal from 22,000 miles away. And now suddenly something that is 70 dB above the noise floor is going to be 2,000 feet away from that dish.
Yeah. And that being a 5G spot that is using that frequency. We got a break for a second, but I want to ask you one question that I haven't figured out yet. Why is that bit of spectrum around 3.7 gig to 4 gig? Why is that so valuable to 5G carriers? What is it about that frequency area that they want so bad and we're willing to pay a ton for it?
Well, it's not only that. There's about five or six different bands. I mean, they're scarfing stuff up all the way up to 32 gig, I think. I mean, they're like all over the place, but they're, their reason for wanting this is because the same reason that we use it for C-band, in that system that we've designed, it's 99.99% reliable to receive that little signal from 22,000 miles away, regardless of what the weather looks like. Mm-hmm. Well, they want that same resistance to weather. Now, the thing I haven't figured out is, it doesn't go through walls. So, even if it 1,000 feet away. It doesn't pass through walls, but it is resistant to weather conditions.
So it's great for line of sight as long as there's no wall in the way. It's useful for it just amazes me that the cell companies want that so badly that they petitioned and lobbied the FCC for years, and in the end the politicians and the FCC said, okay, we're going to take that away. You people on C-band are going to have to figure out how to be more efficient and use that. So that's the problem. The nearby 5G spots from your cell carriers that are going to use the same frequencies that you've been using for satellite, you've got to filter that out, and you've got to have you've got to filter them out to the tune of 70, holy cow, dB down from what you were experiencing. So you can use the same receiver and the same LNB as you were before. Okay. We're gonna follow up on that. You've got a little slideshow that'll help us understand that even more. So hang on for that. This Week in Radio Tech, Mark Johnson is our guest. Chris Tobin is along too. And I'm eager to hear about this. You know, hey, my stations are out in a rural area. Am I actually affected by this? Mark says, yes, you will be. And I want to understand why. Plus, we'll just look at more of the mechanics and electronics about all this coming up. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by Broadcasters General Store and our friends at Innovonics. We'll be right back. You hang on.
The Aran 655 is the latest addition to the Innovonics family of rebroadcast receivers, designed specifically for FM broadcast translators, also referred to as relay transmitters. The Aran 655 is unique as an uncompromising DSP-based HD radio and FM receiver combined with a powerful 3-band audio processor and dynamic RDS encoder. IP connectivity adds streaming capabilities, and a web browser interface gives you total remote control of the unit from any PC or mobile device. The Aran 655 gives you maximum flexibility for program sources. Select program audio from analog FM, digital channels HD 1 through 8, streaming sources, and analog or AES digital line inputs, all with assignable failover audio backup. The internal RDS encoder allows you to customize your RDS messaging. You can use incoming off-air RDS data, convert HD radio pad data to RDS, convert streamed metadata to RDS, or receive IP telnet data. Comprehensive audio processing includes gated and windowed AGC, a unique syllabic leveler, 3 bands of compression, and both wideband and independent HF limiting. Easy setup is achieved by using 10 factory presets and 10 customizable presets. The processor also supports dayparting, allowing automatic preset changes to follow different programming formats throughout your broadcast day. The front panel has an OLED display and jog wheel with intuitive menus for easy setup, advanced control, and editing for all operating parameters. The Aran 655 dynamic web interface gives you total remote control of the unit from any PC or mobile device. A comprehensive set of menus includes a quick overview of now playing info, input-output control, processor options, RDS encoder, alarms and notifications, SNMP settings, and much more. You can also listen to the live audio broadcast streamed through the web interface.
Check out Innovonics at Broadcasters General Store or check out their website. You can try many of the Innovonics products online, too. BGS.cc is the website to go to check out Innovonics and also to get the phone number, 352-622-7700. Give BGS a call. They are so friendly, so nice. Many of their people are just absolutely good looking. They're a pleasure to deal with at Broadcasters General Store.
Tell them I sent you, would you?
All right. We're talking with Chris Tobin and Mark Johnson. Mark is head president of LinkUp Communications. We have heard a bit on and off for the past couple, 3 years about this land grab. The FCC gave away, said, okay, you know what? You were transmitting on this much spectrum for C-band satellite. Yeah, we're taking half of that away. And now you'll have less than that. Mark, before we get into the we've got important dollar things to talk about, dollar decisions, mm-hmm. money decisions that people have made. We'll talk about that in a second. Being on the Society of Broadcast Engineers, the SBE board, we were mm-hmm. privy to a proposal that the FCC should instead give away a bit of that spectrum, harmonizing with Europe. with the UK, with the European Union. And apparently that wasn't done. It was a different part of that spectrum and a larger part of that spectrum that the FCC took away from C-band, right?
Right. That's absolutely correct. The CBA, the C-band Alliance, which is Intelsat and SES, their idea was 200 megahertz at C-band, and then some of the space down below where the European Union's doing a lot more stuff. They're down in that 3.5 area. And although, you know, the FCC is giving a lot of that away, or selling it, they went for 300 instead of the original 200. And, you know, not sure, you know, what the capacity requirements are that Verizon and AT&T and Sprint sold them on, but that's the number that they settled on was 300 megahertz. And so Intelsat and SES both had to quickly shift and change their plans. And because it you know, this was a question that you and I kind of talked about earlier. Okay. How do we get 500 megahertz on X number of satellites to become 200 megahertz on X number of satellites.
Right.
So there's
I want to point out that 300 megahertz that they took, that right there is what is that? That's 15 times the bandwidth of the entire FM band in the U.S. Because that's 20 megahertz in the U.S. Right.
Right. Right.
20 megahertz is the entire FM band, and the FCC took away 300 megahertz, 15 times to 20 megahertz, and sold it to the cell carriers. Could be good.
You
know, Sailor's important, and I know they know what they're doing for delivering, you know, maximum data to maximum number of people for a good amount of money. Okay, so back to what you were talking about. How are you fitting what did fit in 500 down to 200?
Well, seeing SES and Intelsat spent months figuring out how do we move our customers into that area. And it requires a number of new satellites. I think the number is about 7, in addition to the ones that were already on the launch schedule to replace existing birds. So there are some places where SES and Intelsat did not plan to replace the satellite, and now they will replace it. Because going to DVB-S2, DVB-S2X, or even to Novelsat's NSX compression schemes won't buy you enough to get everybody up into that top 200. But that requires new receivers, cable head ends, and TV stations. And, you know, fortunately, you know, the receivers that are at the radio networks are already DVB-S2 capable. So those changes only need to be made at the uplink to get some compression savings. But what will happen, and this is one of the two-step, you know, going in the top 46 markets, giving them 120 right away, SES and Intelsat can clear out those bottom 6 or 7 transponders. And then what they'll do is as the satellites get launched, those people that still need to go up above 4 gig, those people will get moved to a new satellite, and then they'll be higher up on the transponders. Mm-hmm. So it's a delicate dance, and this is where it comes in how important it is on the downlink side. You know, it 2 years ago, summer of 2018, everybody was in a rush to get registered because if you don't get registered, you're not covered. And then at the last minute, back in February of this year, they came out and said, hey, if you'll just opt out of the big plan that we're going to have the satellite guys take care of your downlink, we'll give you $8,948. Mm-hmm. And that's great, but it's really not free money. There's no such thing as free money. It makes you responsible for making sure that your content delivery system still works. And they're going to put that on you. So in the situation where SES or Intelsat is taking care of about half the folks, because I think there were about 18,000 registrations somewhere in that neighborhood, and a little over 8,000 took the opt-out. So that means there's about 8,000 left in. So SES and Intelsat still have to manage those, and then they have to do that according to the clearinghouse coordinator, and then the payment clearinghouse, and all that, you know, runs through these companies, non-broadcast entities, I might add, that the FCC has assigned to those roles. So if you're one of the people who did not take the opt out or the lump sum, and you are registered, you need to respond to SES and Intelsat, and they both have specific, representatives handling this. In the case of SES, it's USSI. It's a group called USSI. They do a lot of large scale satellite projects all over the world. And then Satellite Engineering Group is another large company. It's a part of WESCO, and they're handling this contact and coordination of getting filters out for Intelsat. So that those two companies, if one of those two companies calls you, it's critical. It's very critical that you respond to it, because you didn't take the opt out, so you don't have the $8,948 to upkeep your content distribution. So now you need to let them handle it. Let them do their job. They're not coming to you for money. They're going to take care of everything. In some cases, it may be that you need a new dish, and they will take care of that. That's part of their mandate from the FCC.
Wow. Tell you what, Mark, let's move through. I'm going to have questions about the money, but I'm a visual learner, so you've got some slides to show us. Let's look through those slides.
Sure.
Have you tell us what each one means, and then we'll come back to this topic about did you opt for the money, and what kind of a boat will you be in if you just take it to Las Vegas and spend it, or what? Tell you what, if we get Suncast to start us out here. C-band transition has begun. Where are you in the process? Yep. I think my situation. My business partner decided to take the money and maybe run. Yep. What does that mean?
Well, it's probably a good idea in your situation, because you know that your dishes work and they currently function. You're also in a smaller community, so you're not... Yeah. Yep. You're not going to have this happen to you in the next 12 months, like everybody in the top 46 markets. Now, Chris has got to worry about this, starting this time next year.
He's in market numero uno.
That's right. Exactly. the auction takes place in 4 weeks, and then, they got to pay up, and Chris has got 12 months to get ready. And everybody else in that market, from New Jersey to New York, Boston to DC, it's going to be getting those filters in and getting them in before, because, right now the broadband companies are putting things in place so that, when they get that frequency, they're just going to be able to light it up.
And boy, when they light that stuff up, it's going to interfere with your C-band reception. Let's look at slide number two here.
Okay. So this goes back to your question. So this is kind of what you were getting is, how did this all start? Well, basically the FCC is leading this auction so that the mobile operators can purchase a geographic license. Let's go back to market numero uno. Verizon's going to get a geographical license and, for a certain frequency and amount of frequency within that market. Same's going to be, for Sprint, AT&T, they're all going to be in there. And that will help in all of the top 46 markets, actually, plus Panama City, Florida, where I live. And that's all due to Hurricane Michael and the disaster that the wireless companies had here, and basically letting everyone down in this market. We were without phones and data for 5-6 weeks after the hurricane.
Wow.
Luckily, iHeartRadio was here. And, you know, that was everybody's source of communications, you know, whether it was the government or individuals. And iHeart did an amazing job.
Well, that was our friend Charlie Wooten who took care of a whole lot of that, getting stations back on the air. All right.
Oh, yeah,
so let's look at our next slide.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is the, yep. So this is the capacity auction. So, you know, basically selling off the transponder capacity, and, you know, bidders could include satellite operators. You know, they could try to hold bandwidth in a particular market, but it's all going to go to mobiles. It's going to wind up going to the U.S. Treasury, and the cost of relocation is going to come out of those funds. So we'll actually know sometime next month what the first stage of revenue is, because out of that revenue, all this revenue that we're talking here, is going to come the satellite launches, making the new birds, launching the new birds, and operating them and transitioning people to them. So those are all things that are going to come out of that auction, pile of money.
So not only broadcasters and their receivers are getting reimbursed through that auction money, but also the satellite operators and the new birds they got to fly are right. coming out of that money. Wow. Give me a quick view here of the frequencies we're talking about. How does that relate to transponder numbers? Because we often think about transponder numbers. What transponder numbers are going away in the old scheme?
Well, yeah. So you think in terms of the old scheme. And it's everything from 3,700 up to 4 gigs or 4,000 megahertz, right? So you're talking about 300. Each one of those transponders is 36 megs.
Okay.
So somewhere around transponder... 13, a little closer to transponder 13 is kind of where that's going to, because you're talking about 60% of the capacity of 24 transponders.
Okay. And just so I get the technology right, I realize that, you know, broadcasters, whether you're sending audio or video, we're getting, you know, better codecs to get good quality, even great quality through at a lower bit rate. But I take it that the new satellites, the uplinks, the satellites themselves, and the downlinks are switching to, going to have to switch to better modulation schemes. They get more bits per hertz. Am I kind of right on track about that?
Well, yeah, but you're actually going to do that at the uplink, you're going to do the modulator will have the coding scheme. So you know, if you're going to go to 8 PSK or 16 PSK, you're going to go to DVB-S2, you're going to go to HEVC. You know, there's all types of options. But basically, onboard the satellite, it's really just an RF repeater.
It doesn't care what the modulation scheme is, right?
Right. It's taking in a frequency and a range, and it's taking that and it's down converting it, because it receives it at 6 gigs.
Right.
And then down converts it onboard the satellite, reamplifies it, transmits it down at, you know, 4 gigs.
Okay. Let's move on to our next slide here.
Next slide. So this is the timeline. This is, you know, this is critical because this kind of tells you where we've been, you know, and this is how fast they're moving. And this timeline has not changed. This timeline is not going to change. I was on a call with Intelsat the other day. They said, you know, we even talked about, you know, possible issues with getting the satellites built. You know, everybody's got COVID issues and you know, assembly lines and things like that have issues. Nope. FCC says the timeline's the timeline. Well, here's the first part of the timeline. This is what we've seen already. Clearinghouse coordinators have been picked. The window for comments have closed. You know, satellite operators filed their transition plans. Those transition plans, which went in back in June 12th. Those were the ones that involved those folks who did not take the lump sum. So if your station did not take the lump sum but is registered, you're included in that transition plan. And that's why SES and Intelsat are trying desperately to reach you. So if you have a message on your phone from SEG or USSI, they're calling on behalf of that timeline. Let's go to the next half of the timeline.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. We'll see that. Oh, good. Okay.
All right. So satellite operators transition plans were finalized in August. And now you see December 8th, you know, 3-4 weeks away, the auction begins. Okay. And then you have actually 3 days less than a full year in those top 46 markets to get those first filters, which will be called the red filter. They're the ones that will block everything below 3820. And then by December 2023, it's national clearance.
So it's not one. It's not one filter install. It's one filter and then another filter later on.
In the top 46 markets, it's one filter. I mean, two filters. It's the red filter and the blue filter. For, you know, everywhere else, it's one filter, especially in radio, because they've already moved everybody up above that clearance for December 2023. So they're already at that frequency where we can go ahead and put in that blue filter at any radio station in America. So that's why SES is trying to get ahead of the game. Now, Intelsat's got some radio, but it's public radio. So, you know, that's in a sense, a limited number of downlinks. You know, there's about 1,000 of them, 1,300 of them. And you know exactly when they were last built because it's in the public PRSS files. What SES is dealing with is the commercial and the Christian stations. There's no continuity. There's, you know, multiple different brands, ages. You know, I've seen stuff in Washington, D.C. I promise not to mention the company once or the engineer, but I 2 years ago, you know, 3 years ago, we worked on a dish that was 35 years old in a top 10 market. So, you know, there's a lot to deal with there. And, they want to get on that because they want to take care of their customers who are Westwood and Premier and, you know, Skyview and all of those folks.
Mark, we've got to take a quick break here, and we're going to come back with more of your informational slideshow to tell people what they need to do. And you mentioned one thing that I can't get out of my head, and that is take that phone call. When somebody from one of these companies, SEG or USSI, calls you, take that phone call. They're not trying to sell you a bunch of hokum. You need to take that phone call. Although there may have been a hokum dealer out there, we'll cover that coming up. So maybe in our tips of the week at the end of the show. This Week in Radio Tech, episode 518. I'm Kirk Harnack. Chris Tobin is standing by on the sidelines. And Mark Johnson is with us talking to us about this big transition where we're losing 60% of the C-band frequencies. And so TV and radio broadcasters are all being affected by this and what you need to do to be prepared for this. And the good news is it's not costing you anything, but you do have to do a little bit of work. Our show is brought to you in part by our friends at Broadcast Bionics and the fabulous X-Screen call screening software. We'll be right back.
X-Screen 2, the simply amazing new way to control, screen, and log calls using your Telos HX6, IQ6, or VX Talk Show systems. Helping you to get the best calls to air quickly and easily. X-Screen 2 is a powerful touchscreen interface that connects alongside your VSET 6 or VSET 12 handsets, and even enables you to screen directly on your PC using a USB headset or sound card. X-Screen 2 clearly displays the status of lines and hybrids, quickly captures caller details for screening, and automatically stores a log of calls and easily manages station and show directories of important numbers. There's also a scheduling clock and chat window for instant messaging and visual talkback to other X-Screen workstations on the system. As soon as the line rings, the caller's name is displayed, if they've rung before, and we can look up their location. X-Screen also usefully shows how many times they've called before and when they last called. You can add alerts to identify nuisance or persistent callers before you've even answered the call. To route a call to the VSET or headset, simply click on the handset symbol, exactly as you would use the button on the VSET. Using the other icon on the line, we can hold the call or route the call to a hybrid. Selecting an alternative device will change the icon key so you'll always know the destination of the call. The tabs on the right-hand side provide more information and control the selected caller. We can add this caller to a caller directory or create a manual entry for someone we call regularly. Calling someone is as simple as just clicking dial on their entry. A free version of X-Screen is included with your HX6, IQ6 and VX Talkshow system. The full version of the software enables the caller database, directories and alerts and other cloud-based features. All Telos customers can try the full version for 3 months by downloading the free trial. More information is available by contacting Broadcast Bionics or your local dealer.
And in the U.S., your local dealer is Broadcasters General Store for Broadcast Bionics. All right, we're talking to Mark Johnson about this urgent satellite thing. Mark, would you reiterate in just a sentence or two why this is urgent right now for broadcasters like me? What do I need to make sure I'm doing?
Okay, there's a couple of things that let's go to the folks who did not take the opt-out first, because their timing is critical. This month, if you have not returned a call of SEG or USSI, it is critical that you do that so that they can put you in the schedule, because in January, groups like ours are going to be given the task of doing a virtual site survey so that they know what you need. And I go back to this thing. If you didn't take the opt-out, you are registered, and they determine that you need a new satellite dish, you're going to get it at no cost to yourself. At the very least, you're going to get filter and installation and documentation. You're going to get the documentation, everything done for you by these companies. They're going to send somebody like our team, a Global VSAT certified installer, who will come out, do a great job. And it won't be just installing the filter. They'll peak and pull it, improve your technology, replace your coax cable, put on new connectors, weatherproof it. They'll do the whole bit. So these folks are definitely not trying to sell you a pig and a poke. They're actually trying to give you, the pig already dressed and barbecued, with all the fixings. So
let's look at our next slide. Slide 6, Suncast. Okay. Relocation Payment Clearinghouse. That sounds like a gobbledygook. What is that?
Yeah. Okay. These two groups are the groups that SES and Intelsat have to go through to set up the timing of these installations of filter replacement. They got to get all this stuff approved, and they got to get it reimbursed. So it's very important that you help them do all of this, because the government put these two groups in charge of getting this done for all of us. Now the folks like your station that and the Delta group that took the lump sum, the responsibility to do all of this is on you. And the good news is, there are people out there like us who can do it. We'll be going everywhere for Intelsat and SES. And so if you took the lump sum and you want us to come put your filter in, and you want us to do the same level of test and documentation that SES and Intelsat require, we'll come out and do that. LinkUp's guys will be everywhere. And I do mean they'll be everywhere, because ultimately, regardless of where you're at some point in the next, 5 years or so, these things are going to start popping up in every market. And if they put it within 1700 feet of your dish, it's going to probably cause you an issue, even if you have the filter on, if they get that close to you. So what you got to do is you got to be well documented, because when you call up the FCC to complain about them putting it too close and them operating it out of parameters, the first thing that they're going to ask you is, what'd you do with the money we gave you? It's the old Goodfellas things. Where's the money, Karen?
Let's, speaking of markets, let's look at our next graphic, which shows what is the, I think these 46 markets that have 120 megahertz cleared by December 5th of next year, just a year and a month away.
Yep. The only one in that group, the one that doesn't count in that group is Honolulu, because they're doing Alaska and Hawaii differently. But the top 48 there go all the way to Albany, New York. So, this is going to be the folks that are, you know, if you took the lump sum in one of these markets, you know, Columbus, Ohio, or, you know, Tampa, you know, you're going to have your filter and your documentation done before this time next year, or you're going to wind up losing that content delivery that so many radio stations are using for the majority of their programming now. You know, whether you're taking, football from Learfield or IMG, or if you're taking programming from Westwood, or you're taking talk radio from Premier, you know, it doesn't matter what the format is. You've had 99.99% reliability with your C-band content delivery. And I'm telling you, as soon as they light it up, it will wipe you out if the filter's not installed and you're not tuned. And what's your alternative? Your alternative satellite is putting in a bunch of, you know, high speed internet lines, and you're going to need to put in more than one. So now you've gone from a system that cost you nothing on an operating basis, you know, maybe an occasional LNB or something, to something that maybe is going to cost you $300-$400 a month to operate. And, you know, that's a budget killer for a lot of markets.
I think your next slide shows these companies that are handling this. So you be sure you know their names. What we have here. Oh, yeah. There we go.
That's right. So SES has retained USSI for the coordination of 5G mitigation for all the satellites operating on SES's orbital fleet. Intelsat has satellite engineering group. That's Chris Childs and his team out of Kansas to provide coordination for 5G mitigation. So it's very critical that you respond to these folks if you did not take the lump sum. If you did take the lump sum, here's another tip. There are people coming out with 5G filters that are not part of the 5G design that SES and Intelsat spent millions of dollars to develop. And like I said, it's many generations, and that 70 dB of attenuation over 20 megs is critical. Now, I've seen some being promoted that are like 60 dB, you know, that's not the real deal. And Satellite Engineering Group's got a stack of these. We'll keep a stack of them. And so you want to make sure that you reach out to somebody who's got the filter that is really by that SES Intelsat design.
Is there some marking on it that would help assure you're getting the real deal filter?
Well, as far as I know, I only know of two brands that for sure are going to be providing that design, a group called ALGA, ALGA, and Microwave Filter Company.
Okay.
So those two, and I believe you can get either one of those through SEG.
Okay. Our next graphic here is a nice looking graphic. Tell me what we're looking at here with regard to satellite position and transponders. What's this?
Well, this is kind of what, what you see when you're, you know, looking at a satellite, and specifically, that's the satellite SES 11 that Premier and everybody is on. And as you can see, there's a lot of big carriers there. All of the test equipment, the satellite finder, the spectrum analyzer, you know, all of that is really required to document the work. So when we come in for SES or Intelsat, or if you as a station who took the lump sum calls on us, what we're going to do is we're going to you know, not only install the filter and document performance before and after, but we're going to align the antenna, peak it up. For video customers, they actually may have to move dishes. So we're actually going to have to move. We're also going to be doing installation of new antennas for some customers. But basically, you want all of that detail, you know, whether it's weatherproofing or new connectors or new cable, you want all of that as part of your solution, and that you want to be able to document and say, this was done. Because what we all as broadcasters want to do is maintain C-band as a cost-effective, reliable content distribution system. We've relied on it since CBS and Mutual and everybody went C-band in 1983. And, you know, it can last us another 40 years.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. It sure can. On the one hand, we want to think internet's great for everything, but hey, we have this system in place. The OPEX costs month to month, year after year are zero or close to zero. And the the CapEx cost of getting the stuff oftentimes is provided by the satellite distributor. Oftentimes the receiver is free. You may have to pay for the LNB and the dish. It's a great deal for broadcasters. Hey, Mark, we got one more slide. We're going to look at that after we come back from our break, because it's a great picture of you on a man lift and taking care of one of these dishes. I'm Kirk Harnack. You're watching This Week in Radio Tech, episode 518. We're talking about what you need to do to make sure you're covered in this transition where more than half of the C-band for satellite dish reception is going away. Our show This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by my friends over at Angry Audio. And here's something that won't make you angry. It's an Angry Audio headphone amp. And look at these sexy curves. Ooh, you will not snag your pantyhose on these sexy curves when you mount this up under your console. You can put that under there. It's got two kinds of headphone jacks on it. As I say, country and Western, the quarter inch and the eighth inch headphone jacks there. And on the backside, it's got a place to put in your power, your AC power right there, 16 volts AC. And it rectifies that internally. And then you can actually use this as an injector to go feed power to other units if you want to. You can daisy chain these. And this uses, of course, the Studio Hub standard for wiring left and right audio and power on one Cat 5, Cat 6 cable and the RJ45 connectors. Now that's all analog. That's not AOIP, but it's a great wiring scheme to get that done. So this is just a beautiful, beautiful headphone amp. The other thing that you need to know about, this is great for your home studio. If you haven't got these yet, shame on you, because these make life so easy. It's the Bluetooth audio gadget from Angry Audio. You can pick these up from any broadcast equipment dealer. Don't get a substitute. Get this one right here, the Bluetooth audio gadget. And this lets you put your phone onto the audio console. It doesn't matter what kind of audio console it is, if it's a prosumer type or a fully professional broadcast type, you can get that audio right here. And you can use it as kind of like a hybrid, right? You can take phone calls, two-way audio, with your VIP caller or your caller listener, or, you know, if you're interviewing the governor, the mayor, or these days, the election official. Oh, that's right. They're not talking. So you can interview whoever you like, get them on the air and put them on your podcast, on your radio show. Do it from your home studio. It really makes life easy. Thanks a lot, Angry Audio at angryaudio.com. You'll find lots and lots of cool things to make your life, your studio life, a whole lot better. And all the Studio Hub Plus wiring products. Check it out right there. Hey, we're going to hear from our friends at Max Connect, and Gary Morrill is here to tell us about how good that service is. We'll be right back.
I'm Gary Morrill, Midwest Regional Director of Engineering for Alpha Media. When I first spoke with Josh Bone about Max Connect, he told me they'd work great for remote transmitter sites where connectivity was a challenge. And you know, he's absolutely right. We even have sites where we're using this as a backup to our STL using Max Connect's dual carrier option, and it works perfectly. We also have times where we need to be able to get out to a venue where it's kind of challenging because everybody and his brother is trying to stream video at the same time, like at a big sporting event. And you know what? Our data gets through every time because it's prioritized packet data. It works for us. It'll work for you. Max Connect. Check it out.
I've got mine right here, too. So I have my paddle antennas on mine. Check it out at maxconnectwireless.com, a great way for broadcasters to get our data reliably from place to place. And you get a fixed IP address with your MaxConnect. So if you need to push audio, say, to your transmitter site, no problem. You got that fixed IP address that really helps you deal with that. All right, we're almost at the end of our show. I want to show that last slide and have Mark Johnson tell us what's going on here. You're on a man lift. Man, I usually have to crawl up into that dish, and that can't be good for the dish. So you're doing this the right way.
So actually, this was an iHeart dish in Tallahassee, Randy Moore's site there. And that one is up. You need a man lift to get that one because it's about 25 feet in the air to get to that. But that's where the filter goes. That filter goes between the L&B and the feed assembly. And, you know, this is kind of what we do, you know, soup to nuts. And, you know, in this situation, it's very similar to what we'll be doing for 5G is going repointing, realigning, taking, you know, data about the performance of the antenna, the performance of the L&B, and the performance of the filter. And, you know, our team does this all over the country. Our guys are some of the best. I'm really proud of our team. And, you know, you had one of our guys on a few months ago, Doug Watson.
Oh, yeah, Doug.
And we're fortunate to get Doug on our team. And, you know, our team is full of folks who've done this for quite some time. Bruce Chestnut used to be with, ISP before it became IMG, and, Robert Morrison, our lead, installer, does a lot of stuff for Sirius XM, in his spare time. So when he's not working for us, so
Mark, if we're about out of time, if you could leave us with one sentence of what one big takeaway do we have to take away from our conversation here?
It's time to act. You know, the action may be to return that phone call, SES or Intelsat, or to call somebody like us and get on the schedule. But whatever it is, make the call, make the action, get in line, and get your station taken care of and protected. Don't call after the content is gone.
Mm. Yeah, you'll have dead air for days at that point.
Yep.
Take care of it now. Chris Tobin, I have learned so much, and you, sir, are in market number one. May or may not be the first market, but you can bet they're lighting up a lot of 3.7 gig on 5G in your neighborhood.
Well, let me put it this way. I work with an RF engineering firm as a freelancer, and I have been involved in several projects recently that are 5G related at frequencies way above 3 gig, up around 28, 32, and a few others. And it's fascinating, the conversation as to what they're trying to do and how they'll accomplish it over several miles of point-to-point at frequencies that I'm pretty sure the laws of physics don't allow. So I'm looking forward to how this 5G 3.7 to 4 gig filtering and everything else going on, because my dish sits against a wall, on a parapet, on a building about, 12 stories high. And, yes, I can see the skyline and many other things. So I'm guessing I'll be in the crosshairs of several paths. So it's going to be fun to see how that rolls out.
Wow. Well, I wish you luck. I know Nashville is in the top 50 markets, top 46. I think Nashville's typically about market 43 or 44. So I'll talk to my friends here in Nashville, see how. Chris, you kind of keep your ear to the ground, if you would, Chris, and see what kind of – I doubt you'll have any disasters there, because people will probably take care of what they got to take care of. Nashville, I'm 90% confident, but not 100%. And stations that are out in the hinterland, like where my stations are, I got a feeling that there will be a few disaster stories down the road.
Oh, I'm sure it's going to be interesting. I don't think a lot of folks – understand the gravity of what's going on, because I've talked to several people and they're under the impression it's a simple little, it's a filter thing, that's all we have to worry about. I'm like, no, it's a little more than that. It's an emitter that's 70 times stronger than what you normally get within a couple of thousand feet of your dish. It's a big difference there. You're picking up microwatts of signal at the dish while there's milliwatts coming about 1,700 feet away. That's a big difference filtering. At 70 dB, 20 megs, that's a hell of a filter. I'd love to see the graph on that one. That's pretty cool.
All I can think of is, can you hear me now? Shut up! Yes! You're interfering with everything else! All right, we got to go. Mark, thank you so much for being with us. Your website, people want to go and get information on you. Where do they go?
www.linkupcommunications.com.
All right. We will put a link to your site in our show notes for today and hope that people do all the right things and don't get knocked off the air. We do have to go. Mark, thanks again. Appreciate you. Chris, thank you so much for being with us and lending your insights as well. Well, I got to go. Let's see. Next week, we're going to be broadcasting live from the WSB AM transmitter site in Atlanta, Georgia. It's a huge tower, 50,000 watts. Charles Kinney will be there. Maybe Jim Armstrong will make a surprise appearance. We don't know yet. And a number of other engineers are going to be there as well for a little party. So, Chris, I hope you'll join us. Bring along an adult beverage and we'll have a good time. And then in 2 weeks, it's Thanksgiving. I think we're going to take Thanksgiving off. I don't know. We may get together and eat some turkey. And it'll be officially, though, a holiday. And then after that, Hal Neller is going to be with us talking about hybrid synchronous FMs over an interesting area. It's technology that's right over my head. We're going to check that out. We got to go. Thanks to Suncast for producing today's show. Really appreciate your great effort, Suncast. Also, thanks to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network. Tell your friends, like us on Facebook and, you know, the YouTubes, and that helps. And hey, make a comment in the YouTube comments. That always helps the algorithm and makes us do a little bit better. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.